listening to CKUT 90.3 FM on the dial www.ckut.ca on the internet. For the last 150 years or so, the West has assumed it could shape and control most aspects of power and policy across the Arab world, whether due to imperial self-interest, energy issue, or economic need. As Arab citizens now shed docility and threaten to take control of their own societies, many in the West aren't sure how to deal with this possibility. On the line with us, we have Omar Dahi. He's Assistant Professor of Economics at Hampshire College. Omar, welcome to our show, and thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Could you just raise your voice a little bit, Omar? I can hardly hear you.
Thank you for having me.
Yes, is
better?
Yes, that's fine. Thank you very much. Omar, as this article says, it was penned by Rami Khoury, many countries are not sure how to deal with the Syrian revolution in particular. What do you read in the cards? Well, first, let's start by the closest country, Turkey. Turkey has taken a very honorable stand, and at a very early stage, it said to Bashar al-Assad that he has to negotiate with his own people. You've been in Syria. Tell me, what did you sense, and why is Turkey so much inclined to side with the people of Syria?
Well, first of all, Turkey, for the last 10 years, especially since the AK party has come to power, has had very close ties with the Syrian regime. And in many ways, people have interpreted the fact that they have been turning eastward after perhaps the negotiations with the with the European Union have been stalling. They're turning eastwards to look for an influence in the Arab Middle East or the Islamic Middle East, places to market their products. So very much within Syria, people find that Turkey's role in Syria and elsewhere in the Middle East is out of national self-interest, in a sense. Yes, they're thankful that Turkey has, in many ways, not sided with Bashar, but I feel they're very suspicious, or they're very careful to look at the all the countries that might interfere in Syria as interfering or intervening in as much as it serves their self-interest. And that's something that is always making the opposition hesitant when dealing with these countries. But at any rate, I feel that Turkey realized early on that the tide of the Arab Spring is going to extend to Syria. And they started off, they didn't immediately start off as criticizing the regime. They started off giving them advice that you should implement the reforms. But when they realized that the regime was basically not listening and was going to continue with the more military solution till the end, they feared that this is going to cause lots of instability and lots of problems for them, and that ultimately the regime is not going to succeed. So very quickly they decided to start more openly criticizing the regime, and people inside Syria felt that they could have done more, in the sense that they started criticizing, then they withdrew a little bit after the Turkish elections, and then now they're increasingly giving stronger statements.
We must say they played it very shrewdly.
Yes, definitely. They played it very shrewdly. And of course, the problem, I mean, aside from what they should do morally, it's very difficult because, the Syrian regime, one of their assets is that they are, guarantors of stability in the region. And of course, Turkey and other countries regionally don't want instability. They were giving the regime a long leash to deal with the protests or to find a way out of the crisis that would maintain stability. I think Turkey and others feel that the regime itself is now the biggest cause of instability, and that's why they're intervening more forcefully.
Now, this is Turkey. How about the European Union and the other European countries and the West? They are, they're threatened with the economic sanctions. I'd like you to comment on the extent of these sanctions, the effectiveness. Are they going to hurt the regime or even more the people, as we have seen in the sanctions applied to Iraq in the 1990s?
Yes, well, when the crisis started, to sort of go back and trace the evolution of the West's reaction, again, they were hesitant, and I feel, and many of the things that I heard from the opposition members within Syria, is that what is taking the European Union and the United States so long to come out very forcefully against the regime? I feel like Turkey, they felt that the regime's stability or the region's stability is important. They knew that Syria had many cards in their hands that they could stir up trouble, and in a sense, they were giving the regime lots of distance to or lots of time. But the sanctions that were applied initially had very little effect, especially those from the United States, which does not have lots of economic ties already with the regime. The sanctions that were applied by Europe initially also did not have much of an economic impact. Now, the possibility of an oil embargo or preventing Europe from buying Syrian oil, that has a much bigger impact. Europe has extensive ties, not just in the oil sector. I mean, that is more well known, the fact that Syria sends most of its oil to Europe, but also in terms of Syrian machinery, spare parts, and all sorts of other equipment that they also buy from Europe. So if Europe wanted to, of course, they could apply very strict economic sanctions, and even though Syria is trying to substitute that with China and other countries, they won't be able to do it really in a timely basis. Yeah, in terms of the impact
exactly.
of the sanctions...
I'm going to intervene here. The time is a very important factor, because Assad is unleashing his army on the protesters. He's killing the protesters, so we're seeing people sacrificing their lives. Those are civilians. They're just asking for freedom. So how long would it take before actually the regime would feel the crunch?
Well, I feel that's just it. People now are very desperate, that they want to see severe sanctions or diplomatic pressure exerted on the regime. In fact, right now, there's increasing talk, which I think is very dangerous, about an armed intervention, or even an armed intervention that follows an armed conflict between the opposition and the protesters. I feel the severe sanctions and diplomatic sanctions against the regime, in order to signal that the regime, that they can't win, because the way that the regime has operated in the past is that they feel that they can stall enough pressure, or they can stall for enough time and then deal with the fallout or the consequences later. Severe or intense sanctions, UN Security Council resolution that, for example, one of the things that's being talked about is to force them to open up the borders for international observers to see or to document what's going on. That will signal to the protesters that, yes, you're not alone, which is what they felt for a very long time, and also to the regime that there's no way out for you other than negotiating with the opposition or having a transition from power. That has to be that way. Until now, it actually hasn't happened. There hasn't been a very strong UN Security Council resolution and completely isolating the regime. But that's happening, of course, from the perspective of the opposition. It's not happening quickly enough.
Well, we remember that the opposition was going on free principles, unity of the Syrian people, no violence, no foreign intervention. Now, of course, the situation has changed. Now, about the change in the situation, I'd like you to comment on what you've seen a month ago and what you feel, you sense now, or from the news you are getting now.
Yes, a month ago when I was in Syria during the month of July, I really heard about some horrible atrocities taking place in Syria. Some of them that was being told on the outside, but some of them that hadn't even reached the outside world, that are now being documented, such as the deaths in custody that Amnesty International reported about.
72 prisoners.
Very difficult stories of torture, mutilations, and I even heard stories about rapes. Now, this is, I wasn't able to document this myself, and I wanted to sort of stress that these are stories from people who were trying to document them showing that, in fact, they had occurred. And now what we're hearing from human rights organizations that, in fact, they have been occurring. So the security situation was very bad, but it was not the case in Damascus. In Damascus, it hadn't seen the biggest city, Damascus and Aleppo, it hadn't seen the biggest protests, or they hadn't seen very large protests. And so it was possible for many people inside Damascus to think that a lot of what's happening is being exaggerated by the media, they're lies, this is a Western imperialist conspiracy, and so forth. And of course, many people in Syria have been traumatized by the invasion and destruction of Iraq. They saw firsthand the effects of, the ethnic cleansing that took place, the refugees that many of them went to Syria. They, they see the continued support of the U.S. for Israel. So they don't believe the West. They don't believe the Western media, or they're suspicious of it. But I think more and more it's becoming obvious for many people inside the country that there's something horrible going on and continuously going on. For example, especially in places like Homs and Hama. I visited Hama before the government went in and basically committed a massacre the day before Ramadan. Up until when I visited, the citizens had taken over the city and were basically running their own affairs, and life was going on as normal. But the government couldn't stand that, and they invaded and they killed many people. So there's very bad and increasingly worse situation. The detention centers and the prisons are full. There are stories of the regime putting people in warehouses and schools because they simply don't have enough places to put everyone in. So it's lots of deaths, lots of kidnappings, lots of people wounded.
But also, Omar Dahi, recently there has been defections in the army, and the prosecutor general resigned because he refused to sign phony death certificates. So is this...
Yes, we can't say that there's been lots of defections in the army. Yes, very recently there are some defections. But actually, even while I was there, there were lots of conscripts, meaning low-ranking soldiers, who were running away from service, or you could say defecting. They basically didn't want to be part of killing their own people. One of the main reasons, obviously, why you haven't seen high-level defections is because a lot of the high-ranking military and security apparatus officials are very loyal to the president. They... whether through personal loyalty, through sect loyalty.
Or interest, economic interest, simply.
Or economic interest.
Yes.
Right. They're very loyal, and you're not likely to see the type of defections that you saw elsewhere. But because of the incredible violence and the pressure that's being inflicted, I think you're more likely to see defections, especially from people like the Hama prosecutor who... basically is a government functionary, but he doesn't have those same types of ties.
Privileges and ties.
Yes.
Well, thank you so much, Omar. Just before we end this interview, I'd like to point out that here at CKUT, we don't use the word Arab Spring, because spring is supposed to be looks like a passive phenomenon, something that happens to people who have no power and no say in the process. The terms that Arabs use to describe themselves epitomize activism, empowerment, and determination. This was written by Rami Khoury for the local Globe and Mail here in Canada. And we use the term revolution because really we think that it's something great happening in the world, in the Arab world. So I hope you will agree with me.
I agree, and I would just add one thing, that a lot of the movements that are happening now are a continuation of movements that have been happening a long time in the Arab world. It's just they haven't been reported on.
Thank you so much, Omar Dahi. Omar is Assistant Professor of Economics at Hampshire College. Please stay with us. This is CKUT 90.3 FM on the dial, www.ckut.ca on the Internet.